So let's just start it off like this.
We don't need directions. Maybe we'll find a shortcut.
Ms. Wonderful joining us again.
Ms. Wonderful is correct. We don't need directions. We are a shortcut, right?
Yeah.
So, like,
we're always
directionless. We are directionless.
We're directionless.
I agree. After the conversation I had with this person in the UK who does a podcast that is, well, they consider vaguely similar to ours.
I don't think
they've listened to ours.
I'm sorry. If we're your template, like, the ship's going down.
This is not a model from which you write your first draft, even.
Yeah, I mean, this is like the captain comes on board and he's, you have any experience? It's like, I was running the Andy or Doria.
We're 4 years in, we don't know where we're going or what we're doing or how to do it correctly. We are rudderless.
There are some people that when they set out to do a thing, they have a goal. They have a strategic destination in mind. Ours is just making sure we get out of it every night on Sunday and we get home safely.
Yeah, can we cover the topic and get home safely? It's kind of the whole deal.
Yeah.
Did we get dinner stuffed in there somewhere? Maybe.
Yeah. Do we have enough cigarettes for the day?
No, we not at the price of cigarettes lately.
Don't even remind me.
You're going to have to buy a bag of tobacco pretty soon, sir. Or at least papers or something. I rolled a whole pack of cigarettes here for you
I show up with...
And you're going to go through them in a
Oh, yeah, they'll be
hour.
Done. They'll be gone before we're over the show, yeah.
I show up with fancy desserts and chips and stuff.
You do show up with
and
fancy
beer
desserts.
And
you scared the fuck out of people with your fancy desserts. Like, don't post fancy desserts on Sunday on Facebook.
It
fucks people up. My kid was fucked up. Your girlfriend was fucked up. Nobody knew.
I posted a picture of a...
A
pie.
Not even a whole pie. It's like a 4-inch across pie.
It was like a 4-inch
pie. And you actually took a slice out of that, which is even more admirable. Like, that's talent right there.
Piece of pie and a cup of coffee and everything. Everybody comes down on me that I post a picture of a piece of pie and it's like, whoa, wait, what? You're not doing this on Sunday? What's going on? What's going on? You guys
who's sick?
Yeah.
Somebody died. But
like,
that did happen. But, I mean, like, seriously.
Like, did you guys break up or something?
The band?
I know.
The drummer and the lead singer got in a fight?
It was crazy.
We don't have a drummer. You realize that?
But it was crazy that, like one picture of pie could cause this much consternation among the...
Who would have thought?
I don't know.
But when I got to work last night, I dropped off the cookies for Rochelle. And she was more than
enough. Waited that long for those cookies? Oh, I got super high Monday and ate all those cookies in one sitting.
That night I dropped them off.
Okay.
When I went in...
I missed the time shift.
Yeah. Went in that night, she sat there in the office and just devoured both of them. I didn't get to take one home with me. She devoured both of them.
No, I did exactly what I told Rupert I was going to do. I got super high on Monday and ate all three of those cookies in one sitting and... It was fantastic. I feel guilty, but it was really good guilt. It was like that good, I came on her face kind of guilt.
Well, those were good
cookies.
There's
no guilt
in the
really
cookies.
Good cookies. You should never feel guilt when you come on her face.
Yeah, but
says you.
But oddly, you need somebody of questionable masculinity if you want to have good cookies.
Yeah, like enough to throw balsamic in with cherries. They were good fucking ass cookies, so I really enjoyed it. I was so high. It was so good.
They're good. They were really, really fucking good.
So we had these cherry chocolate cookies that I made last week that were just these, like, gotta have more cookies.
Yeah, they are that.
They were crazy. And oddly, they don't have, like, this extreme amount of chocolate in them or anything.
But they do.
They have this weird tart sweetness to them that makes you think you're going to get sick if you eat three of them.
Yeah.
But you just keep eating them.
But you kind of don't care.
It's like, I could puke and be okay with it. This would be fine coming out my nose. It's going to be just...
I'm good.
Everything's going to be good.
Yeah.
Well, you know, if you get sick off of them, it just means there's room for more.
That's right.
That's the thing.
No, that's the way booze works. If you get sick off of it, puke some of it up, you can drink more.
Well,
you better wait an hour. Because, God, that's just, oh, my goodness, it fucking hurts.
Wish I had that logic in my teens.
Well, 20s. Let me tell you something. There's no greater validation for a cookie maker than it going over swell at the strip bar.
I saw what you did there. Yeah. It went over really swell.
Yeah.
It was a swelling proposition.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, that kind of homo friend of yours makes some good cookies. Yeah.
Right. Ladies and gentlemen and everyone else listening, we are Ruined Heroes, a weekly, free, and self-produced podcast wherein the three of us irreverently discuss a topic of societal renown. I, Tyler, study like a guy you might take to a picnic. John,
I just want things affordable, easy, put them in my pocket, and away we go.
Yeah, there you go. I like it. And Rupert.
One fish, two fish, red fish.
Hitler! Hitler is an appropriate introduction to a podcast.
I just, my intros are current events. I'm sorry if it offends the political
sensibilities.
One fish, two fish, red fish, Hitler is very apropos.
It's funny. So please subscribe or not after that comment. Jeez. And leave good ratings and reviews or not after that comment on whatever podcast feed you get us through. It's free for you. It helps us. We dig it when you do it. To interact with us, we are ruinedheroespod@gmail.com, as well as easily found on Facebook and Twitter for weekly hints. Somebody guessed weekly hint on Twitter and came so crazy close. We get very little Twitter work, and this was a fun one.
Yeah, because nobody follows us. After that comment, like only like Andy Cuomo's following us. Like, that's it.
Another Andy. No. His fault. Anyway.
You know, I
do know.
I have to make fun of people's names.
Yeah.
Because I've lived it.
Rupert, what?
Yeah, I am
Rupert Jr.
I have lived it. Yes, so I get to make fun of people's names. Sorry.
So, yeah, say hi if you show up and
John,
give us on the hints. We
John
like it.
Is straight up validating on Coinbase Pro now.
God damn, I am.
John is straight up validating on Coinbase Pro now. That is how Bitcoin this
is.
We've
been here for a half hour. You couldn't have done this
earlier? This is like ridiculous.
Doing all of it at once, baby.
Clearly. So if you'd like to contribute towards
the cause. You're psycho. You're sitting here yakking on a podcast, doing your ID bank account validation for cryptocurrency.
Let's go back to the psycho thing and talk about the pot and the fucking kettle.
Jesus.
You know, this fair is call. The rock calling the stone different. Fuck off.
Fair call. So either way.
Hey, you know what?
I can't believe you sometimes.
Of all the people in the world, you should be okay with people wanting to deal with their money at any point in time.
That was a ding. That was the jankiest thing other than like. That was like, what? That was what that was.
Hold up. We just sat down a half hour ago. Let me shoot some heroin up.
God.
So either
fuck
way.
Fuck off. You don't have any heroin.
No, I don't. Never have.
Puff.
So anyway, if you'd like to contribute to the cost of the show, you can subscribe at patreon.com, patreon.com/ruinedheroes, and get extra content starting at just $1 a month. There are upper tiers. Some of those, like Nikki, have made the upper tiers. Good job, lady.
Ooh,
there are links
yeah.
in the show notes, as well as on our website, ruinedheroes.com, where you can also find older episodes.
We should have names for those upper tiers.
There are names. She's at the producer level.
It's a weak-ass name.
I was drunk. What do you want?
I think that should
be... Do you think I do any of this work sober? Where's my lighter, you motherfucker?
I think that should be the Tron level or something.
All right.
The Tron level?
I will give you the password to the Patreon if you don't fuck it up too much and you can rename the levels. That would be good.
If you give me the password.
My light cycle level.
The names he would come up with, though, that kind of scares me a little bit.
ATM level. I just see it. Either way, there are links on the
I
website.
Know what ATM means.
I should hope
very clear.
So.
there are links on in the show notes to the website where you can find all our episodes and to all the Patreon shit and stuff. Anyhow, thank you those who do give.
We
do
appreciate it. You're awesome.
It.
Thank you.
You're kick-ass, folks. Thank you. You left a letter out. Twice.
I'm hip like that.
No, you're
I'm
not.
Hip.
No, yeah. You're not.
That is not going to fly on the Twitters.
So, do you want an intro? Never mind. Is it time for an intro? Because I asked the wrong question initially.
Well, I know that we're running low on our list of things to do. So, like, how hard is this?
Oh, no. The premise is really good because there's no end.
Is this possible to get this?
No, not really. Because this is technically a John topic.
Well, here's the caveat to this.
I used the word technically.
Yeah. I was at work, and
I threw out kind of three kind of shitty.
Yeah, and I was not inspired. I'm actually trying to DJ at the same time, and people are pissing me off. And I said right then and there, like, maybe something along these lines. This is a shitty idea. Yeah. But something like this, maybe.
And I said, admittedly, I was feeling uninspired, so let's take one of those. And so it made it for – it's a broad and kind of vague topic, but it works because most of what we are going to talk about doesn't fit into – like, it wouldn't be enough for one.
Right.
All these little pieces wouldn't be enough for one, so I took a bunch and put together. And so it is a vague, kind of like your –
it's an amalgam.
Yes.
It's a concept piece is what it is. It's a concept
don't
piece.
It's a concept piece.
This is going to suck, isn't it? This is really going to suck.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's going to be tough for you.
Well, I don't know.
Let's go with the Hentro.
So
this is like sort of a – it's not person, obviously.
Correct. It's a concept.
Okay. I said it's a concept piece.
Which is why there are no the topics that have been replacing words in my quotes that I've gotten for you. So Dick Clark said this. Music is a soundtrack to your life. And had I known that?
Yeah, I'd have changed my musical choices long ago. Right,
so is it top 40?
Mm. You're actually, like, steering toward the right highway there, buddy.
Yeah.
You're getting real good. A guy named Edward Elgar, who is a composer, said, "My idea is music in the air, music all around us. The world is full of it, and you simply take as much as you require."
Sounds like Bjork.
No. Edgar Elgar, I told you that.
I don't know. Bjork could be a man.
Bjork could be a concept, too.
Wait, was the music is a airy thing?
My idea is that there is music in the air, music all around us. The world is full of it, and you simply take as much as you require.
Recorded sound.
Wow. That is so close that I'm almost going to give it to you, but I want to read these other two hints.
Okay.
You are
amazing.
If you play with the nuances of that, you might get to it.
Yeah.
Because the topic name is actually vague. this was said by Tina Fey. Because I knew it would make Rupert angry. I should have known he and I weren't going to make it when, for my 17th birthday, he gave me a box of microwave popcorn and a used battery tester. You know, to test the batteries before I put them in my Walkman. Like you give someone you love. John knowing the topic, it's a humor.
Are we doing streaming?
Oh, God. You are.
You might as well.
I can't
just
say yes yet because we've got one more, but I am going to give it to you. Okay. I'm going to give you the win.
Okay.
You got the W, but you get one more and see if you get right into it. Okay. This is said by Ad Rock.
I don't even know who Ad Rock is.
Adam Horowitz of the Beastie Boys.
Oh.
I'm not saying that kids today have everything, but with the internet, it's like you have it there. So use it. I know a bunch of kids who are into cassette tapes now. Cassette tapes suck. Why not use your iPod?
All right, so this sounds like Tidal.
It's not Tidal directly. It is the advent of portable music, which is why I gave it to you.
Like I said, it was
a fucking vagary.
Yeah, okay, because oddly, Tidal has this thing. You know, so Tidal's a music streaming service. You can stream to your phone, play it through your car, and drive along. But if you don't want to use up your bandwidth, you can download from Tidal.
You could do that with Spotify. You could do that with Pod.
I'm just saying what I'm familiar with because Tidal's better. And oddly, right before I got here, and you heard it when like I drove up, I had downloaded Beastie Boys' Greatest Hits and was listening to Intergalactic, Interplanetary.
As you drove up, I was actually fetching a beer, and then the dog barked, and so I grabbed two, because I knew it was you, because the timing was right. I didn't hear. Had I known it was Intergalactic you were listening to?
That was exactly what I was listening to.
You lose points for buying a Beastie Boys' Greatest Hits album.
No, there's no buying.
As opposed to an actual Beastie Boys album. But, seriously, the Beastie Boys? Really? Fucking good on ya. Those motherfuckers rock. Those motherfuckers rock.
They were a difficult group.
We have heard about some of your back history.
I absolutely love some of their songs, like Intergalactic. I love that song.
No Sleep Till Brooklyn.
Sabotage. I'm not really into No Sleep, but Sabotage, I love that. And that is the most genius video ever made.
It is a brilliant
video. I love that video.
The Starsky and Hutch and porn callbacks are just so good.
I watched that video actually two or three times while I was baking my Sissy Sassy pies this morning. I actually watched like a whole bunch of Sabotage.
Holy shit. We're listening to Paul's Boutique after this.
I watched it like
Slow and Low is another good one.
I watched it like two or three times. And
I like the whole album Inside from Way Out.
I really like it.
It's amazing.
You know, they were a very funny bunch of guys. They were very prescient in terms of their, you know, musical direction. They were a little full of themselves.
I would argue that, but...
Well, like, I mean...
We'll cover them eventually. You know, I would argue that.
You get to a point, though, where being full of yourselves is kind of a trademark in the music industry. I mean, it's...
Yeah, like, I mean, who we talked about recently? Snoop Dogg, Ice-T, a couple of these people might be full of themselves, might be really good at it.
Yeah. No, I mean, they were very good at what they did. I just, like, I mean, these were guys, like, I would see hanging around. There was this weird-ass building project in New York where I had a bunch of friends who lives. And one of them, their mother still lived there. And so I'd see this guy, like, all the time. And I was riding up in the elevator with him. And he was just, like, he was kind of like, I don't know, where I'd probably be the same way, where he's worth like millions of dollars all of a sudden.
And living in his mom's project house.
No, he was visiting his mom because he had a penthouse somewhere. But, it was really kind of weird. It was just like, he was like, hey, how you doing? And I was like, hey, I've got some M80s here. You want to go? No, I can't do that, man. Oh, okay, fine.
Oddly enough, Ad Rock later in Roadside Profits set off M80s on top of hotels all over the country. But it's a great movie. Check it out. So sources, volocars.com. They have a cool little museum thing and a nice write-up. Visual.ly/community.
I actually hit that one, too.
Oh, did you?
Amazingly,
yeah. That was a good one. Blackpoolgrand.co.uk. Did you hit that one, too?
Fuck.
The HenryFord.org, which is the Henry Ford Museum. They have a good collection of old acoustic devices, music-making things. And mobileindustryreview.com. Those are your sources.
You know, I can't believe you sometimes.
What? Ask a guy to do a thing and then fucking criticize everything that he does to do it.
You know, word on the street is people are starting
Next time, do it your fucking self.
Word on the street is people are starting to think about calling me Chill instead of Rupert. That's how loose I am.
Compared to you, yeah.
Yeah, I'm yeah.
People, I'm sitting with two of the most wound up people I know, and you're, wow.
Hey, you can call me Chill from now on.
All right, you fuckers.
It's like I got cucumbers on my eyes.
So, for most of human history, the only way to take music with you was
bringing... I did not need that head image.
For most of human history, the only way to take music with you was to bring an instrument and or musicians. Live music was the only music. This was not all bad, but it also meant that we could not enjoy music when and where we wanted, especially if we were not very well-to-do and had money. As clockmakers got better at what they were doing, they came up with the music box. No one is quite certain when the first one was all made, although many look at Swiss watchmaker Louis Favre. F-A-V-R-E? Favre?
Favre.
You guys are not helping me Favre. Now. No, you know, Favre. I don't know.
Favre.
Swiss
dude. It's Favre.
John Favreau comes up with this thing.
For helping them become established in the early 1800s, most played a disc or a cylinder that struck small pins, which would resonate a tone. I'm sure you've seen one if you're not one of our super young crowd, but most of our crowd will listen.
Yeah, you're talking about like the jewelry box where it opens up and plays.
Yeah,
like,
I mean, it's just a music box. Yeah, you know, there are ones where you can replace the disc and you can play different songs and such. This was a more expensive option, of course, the replacing the disc kind of thing. But you would see it at parties and picnics and other social gatherings for those rich enough to own one. We cannot move on without discussing the phonograph and all the other versions that there were before and after it.
Well, I think the big thing was actually the player piano.
We're talking portable, which is why I left out the player piano and organs and a number of things. So we're talking portable music.
Yeah, things that can actually be picked up and you can,
like,
walk with.
Carry, like, the, yeah.
you can,
to a picnic.
It takes one person to carry it.
Picnic.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. To me, it's always been like just this astonishing thought that, like, the average person, like, I don't know, 98% of the population up until whatever it would be, 1940, 1930, had no idea what a symphonic orchestra sounded like.
Because they couldn't afford it.
Right. Because you needed all those people hanging around there.
Nor did they know what a harpsichord sounded like or any of that.
Well, no, they because somebody might own a harpsichord, so they might have heard it in somebody's house. But
that's a stretch.
Yeah, and then it would be another stretch to get that person who owns it to be competent to play all these things hanging around. Then you come up with the player piano, and it's like, well, let's throw this on, and all of a sudden you got Moonlight Sonata there.
Or you've got, you know, a bunch of people having a grand old time in the Old West.
Exactly.
Because, you know, everybody's fucking shit-ass drunk, and you need some kind of entertainment in a whorehouse.
Yeah,
but now you've got, like, Ren Faire stuff, you know.
But again, we're speaking of not necessarily portable devices. We're talking about devices that sit in the home. Even the phonograph.
Something that's a single,
especially
one phonograph. Person can pick up and move
I've
and
kind
take
of transposed
them.
It to recorded music or...
But let's stick with portable. Keep portable as part of this, okay?
Yeah.
Again, big topic, but we got there. We're talking about the phonograph, and while it was technically portable, it was not something you would carry over to your buddy's house with these. Like, it would be like you and a friend maybe carried it. Relatively delicate things, but you could take it to your neighbor's house, and you could put a record on, and you could play it, or any of the other versions of the phonograph thing. So along comes the 20th century.
Well, you're talking about those phonographs where you have a steel stylus riding in the groove of a 78 RPM record.
Correct.
Yeah. And
or a cylinder, a wax cylinder,
but
or whatever, yeah.
But in other words, the reproduction of the music is entirely mechanical.
Yes.
That this little steel needle in a groove comes out, and you got the big horn thing sitting there.
And it makes that great big noise. It was enough to fill a room when people were whispering.
It's actually quite astonishing if you ever hear one of those. The ability of that system to reproduce music is beyond what you think it would be when you hear it for the first time. It's actually
quite impressive
what it can do. And so when this was discovered, and, you know, Edison with the wax cylinders and all this kind of horseshit.
Right. With going to the discs.
That must have been just such a revelation for somebody to hear that for the first time.
Well, it was. And because they weren't reliant on electricity yet, they could literally just take it anywhere.
Yeah, because those things
just
will wind
up. Crank it up anywhere.
Those things will wind up, kind of the same as the way you start your car.
Yep.
Or, you know.
Or, as I said, clockmakers.
Yeah.
Like, that's where it kind of came from.
Yeah, but it's quite astonishing the sound that you can get out of those things. I'm not saying it's anything approaching.
It's not Atmos.
You know, right. But it's quite astonishing the fidelity that those things have.
Yeah, and so they were technically portable. And so that might be kind of the beginning of the portable thing. Mm-hmm. So I wrote down the phonograph bit. So along comes the 20th century. The modern radio was introduced. Because we really didn't have modern radio until the 20th century.
What year specifically are you at?
There were lots of
because
different years.
I think that in 1910.
Pre-World War One.
In 1910, with the advent of the headphones, I think that really kind of clicked something in.
We're getting there with that.
I don't think that is entirely portable because basically anything there from, you know, essentially the 19th century, end of the 19th century up until the mid 20th century, you're relying upon vacuum tubes because you don't have, hearkening back to one of our previous broadcasts, you don't have the transistor.
That runs up. Your previous broadcast comes up.
So there were no
hang tight. Really,
that will happen.
This is gonna be a long journey. Hang tight.
There were no really portable radios because you have these vacuum tubes, which require these transformers, which are kind of big and heavy.
Right.
And nobody had figured out how to package that into
We aren't even to transformers or vacuum tubes yet. We're just still using straight up mechanical bullshit.
But you can't get. If they had figured out, if you had a vacuum tube boombox, that shit would be worth money. That'd be worth money now.
Okay. Can we go through the history?
Are you getting all dad with me?
Yeah, a little bit.
Anyway, the Beastie Boys.
I think that in 1910, when headphones came out.
I'll get there.
That's probably where we started getting some ideas.
Promise. It's the next entry after the one I'm about to read.
Uh-huh.
Okay. So,
who'd have thought this would be this contentious?
Me. While writing it, I knew there was going to be some hiccups. Along comes the 20th century. The modern radio was introduced. Originally used by the military and not really available to civilian population, they were for communication. That is until radio stations decided to play music and dramas. Advances in technology at the same time, including vacuum tube tech, made these easier to obtain for the common man. The BBC is noted as being one of the first stations in Britain, and KDKA, owned by Westinghouse, was the first government-licensed station in the U.S. in 1920.
Well, this is actually like, it's a little bit of cultural bias. A little bit of cultural bias going on because the other huge thing which can't be neglected in the advent of music listening on radios would be All India Radio, where All India Radio comes out and starts broadcasting Indian classical music for a country that, like, as a country is probably the most obsessed with their classical music tradition of any country in the world. And
fair.
All India Radio starts broadcasting this stuff where Indian music was previously, you know, they were the biggest on the, let's have the courtesans come in and you know, perform this shit for the crown prince and that kind of thing. They were very, very big on that. And then All India Radio comes out, and they start broadcasting their music to all of India. And it's their classical music tradition, and they're, like, incredibly serious about it. And this becomes, like, a huge thing, because it's a big thing for this group of people.
Fair. I appreciate your interjection.
Just saying
I'm down with it. I'm down with it.
Yeah.
Not insultingly, I'm actually down with it.
Okay. just bringing the ethnic tone here.
A critical part of what we consider
Rupert Chill, bringing it.
No, I'm no longer down with it. So, a critical part of what we consider portable music now was created at a kitchen table in 1910. Nathaniel Baldwin created the first modern version of the headphone. Story goes that the U.S. Navy ordered 100 pairs of these before they learned that Baldwin was making each pair by hand at his kitchen table. And the government, U.S. government, you know, in their infinite wisdom, invests in 100 pairs of these that motherfucker can't be awake or do.
We'll need them by Tuesday.
Right? He's like, I'm building these one at a time by myself.
Do you know what it takes to go into baking these fucking things? Come on.
I got to make the Bakelite shells and everything. They didn't have foam. There was no noise canceling. They were really hard, uncomfortable from what I understand. Look up pictures. They're kind of rough looking.
They're rough looking, but I mean, honestly, they've got all of the same earmarks.
It looks like a modern headphone.
Yeah. I mean, they've got the little head strap on them. Probably made out of leather and hand-stitched. But going through, you have to solder everything independently. You've got it, you know, there's no more quick connect. There's no more just, oh, boom, here you are.
There was no go to Rat Shack and buy pieces. He was literally building all the pieces in his home by himself. So, U.S. Navy orders 100 pairs.
Mm-hmm. If you want to relive this and you got $150 up to like $10,000 or $20,000, you can go to Joe Grado in Brooklyn, New York, and they're still doing it this way.
Would not surprise me.
Or if you want to buy a phonograph needle, they're still doing it this way.
Let's not talk how much my last needle cost, right? I'm still a little angry about that.
You're in the low end of the spectrum.
But it was proprietary, so I had no choice.
Believe me, making things in Brooklyn, New York is more expensive than Germany, actually, at this point. But, like, I mean, they're still doing this shit, with Joe. I've got a Joe Grado cartridge, in Brooklyn, New York. It's like 20 people in a brownstone.
Yep.
It's fucking ridiculous.
Yeah, but they're like 20 people that can really fucking solder like mad people.
Yeah, it's a beautiful.
They're really good.
It's a beautiful, shiny.
It's not just some hanging around.
You do it well.
Shiny solder joint. Yeah.
It's like walking into a tailor shop, you know? You've got, they know what they're doing.
Yeah, they got a lot of index cards. There's no computer there. It's just index cards.
Yeah, right.
So the radios at this time were a little bit more homebound still. Due to poor battery technology at the time, until Edwin H. Armstrong filed for a patent in 1918. The super heterodyne, which is just fun to say and break apart, radio receiver, was officially a portable radio. He completed his first solid working model in 1923 and gifted it to his wife on their honeymoon. She was technically the first person able to easily listen to music anywhere she could pick up an FM signal. Dude's wife, first person who can listen to music anyway.
Well, I think the super heterodyne receivers, when they first pick up this idea of, having amplification to keep it from running away and to keep the things running at their appropriate speed, they introduce negative feedback into the amplifier.
That's above my pay grade. Go ahead.
It's a little bit like when you have a steam engine and you have something known as a governor on it.
Okay.
It's a little bit like that, where you have this thing where if it starts to run away on you,
you release it,
and it clamps it down. Anybody who has rented a budget rental truck.
Knows that they can't go over 50 miles an hour.
Yes. It is the same principle. Same principle. Loose correlations, but that's what I'm talking about here.
Down with it. That's a good one.
You like that, huh? All of a sudden, I have value.
I wouldn't go that far.
That's just mean.
I'm with John.
I resent somebody's sociopathy overtaking mine.
So, music box maker.
I'm only borderline, dude.
You got to commit.
You know, I wish I could commit to one side of the line, but I just can't seem to do it.
So, music box makers were still in the game as well in the 1920s, and the Accordio Boy was produced. It is a Facebook hint. The picture comes from the Volo Auto Museum, which I mentioned as a source. This was an automated or an automaton music box. It was the last effort of the music box era before becoming a novelty old item. Fucking making money. They would have fully moving players, almost like tin marionettes. The 1923 example at the Volo Museum is one of only two known to exist in the U.S.
Jesus.
So essentially it's a music box. And there's like a dude on top that plays a fiddle or a guitar or something.
Yeah,
I mean, they came up with a duo automaton one that had like, and I didn't.
Now you got a three.
I didn't use this one because it was pretty racist looking because the drummer wasn't white, and a really poor depiction of a not white person. But like there was a guitar player and a drummer on some of them. But people just wind them up and play the same song over and over, and they, you know, you have cocktails and you stare at this fucking automaton tin thing banging like a monkey with his cymbals or whatever. It was a weird little movie.
You're the one who said monkey there.
What? Oh, shit. You were just in it to lose it today.
I am... I said it's been a rough day. Moving on.
And they never had some Asian guy playing the drums.
No, they didn't.
I mean, name it. Great Asian drummers.
So, with radios gaining in popularity and functionality... to be dismissive...
Man, I just crashed that one.
Yeah, you did. That Jesus. Boat hit an iceberg, you fucking idiot.
Wow.
So, with radios gaining in popularity and functionality, music boxes were cast aside, and we got smaller and more efficient battery tech to power these portable music devices.
Well, back then they were using two potatoes, right?
Yeah, roughly.
Yeah.
Up until then.
Two potatoes?
Yeah.
Ah, it's sounding kind of slow, Martha. Put some salt on it.
I know.
Yeah.
We can't eat or listen to music. This is Ireland, motherfucker.
Aye. Captain, I'm giving it all she got.
So 1925 gave us what was probably the first, quote, pocket radio. Advertised as Traveler's Delight.
Wait, what year?
1925.
1925, we have a pocket radio?
Yes, sir.
We don't have the transistor then.
Nope.
That was a hot pocket.
They
hot pocket, yeah.
Well said.
Wow.
Yeah, 1925.
You got a picture of this thing? I got to see a 1920 pocket.
Traveler's Delight, John.
1920s pocket radio. That's like insane.
It wasn't branded as the Traveler's Delight.
All right, keep going.
But yeah, John will dig up a picture. So advertised the Traveler's Delight. It weighed in at 4 pounds and is 12 inches long.
This is like the bag phone.
Add an additional optional antenna, and you could listen to your music almost anywhere if you tuned into an FM dial.
No, they didn't have FM.
Oh, yeah, they did. They had FM just, like, in 10. We were talking about FM just a bit ago. FM came around turn of the century.
Wow, no static at all? FM. All right, sorry.
I'm not saying there was no static. But it was a piece of work. It was like this size. It was something.
They had bigger pockets back then.
Yeah, well, or they had pockets, like... Girl jeans.
Yeah, I mean, you're looking at, like, one of these things.
I'm not going to jump out of my nose to go back into it.
I'll take it on faith.
I don't understand
how you have a tube radio that's in your pocket.
In 1925. It happened.
Who was it made by? Trevor's?
Let's see here.
There might be an easier
one. It was made by...
All right. Keep going.
I don't know.
Keep going. We're stalling here.
It was called a pocket radio. Traveler's Delight. Fucking 1925. Anyway, another giant leap was realized in 1928 when Fritz Fluemer, Fluemer, guess where he's from, lacquered some iron oxide to a thin piece of paper, essentially creating the first magnetic tape. This came along, but Moore's recording method, since tape was still too big and delicate to carry around easily. But 1928 cassette tape, essentially.
Sounds like carbon paper.
It kind of was. Yeah. It was iron oxide paper, but so yeah, kind of was.
But
yeah, just,
if you had to simulate it now, I don't even know if they make carbon paper anymore. But
carbon's not magnetic, though. That's
I know. I'm just trying to give an example of what it would be like.
Because they don't. That carbon paper brings us into the modern modern world, buddy. I think
I'm trying to take the closest that we got. You know, I'm just trying. I'm doing my best here. I contribute.
You're worthy, man. You have value.
Trying to like.
You're an idiot. Not to sound like your parents, but you're a fucking idiot.
Jesus, now I feel like you're my dad.
Now it's a meeting.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, now it's a meeting. Hi, my name is Rupert.
So, yeah, this guy Fritz Fluemer, which is awesome, essentially develops magnetic tape.
A name destined to be pronounced by a drunk person.
Right. It's got a P in front of Fluemer.
Yeah.
Fucking kidding me?
That's a drunk name.
So technology kept moving along as it does, and soon we got the transistor. See episode 175 for more info on that. If you're looking at your feed, it's probably closer to 185 because there's some extra stuff in the beginning. But yeah, cleverly hosted by Rupert, and you can learn all about transistors and amplification. So
I told you it would come up. Quite dismissive.
That was straight up cred, dude.
Okay, all right.
Fuck! It was like me in the middle of a rap going, "Oh, you should listen to his song."
Okay.
Yeah, kind of fuck you on that one.
Oh wow! Wow.
So, Texas Instruments and Industrial Development Engineering Associates, poorly named company, teamed up and built the first commercially available transistor radio in 1954. It's called the Regency TR-1. The thing was a marvel, as it could actually fit in a pocket, unlike that giant 4-pound, 12-inch long thing we're talking about. Still trying to look it up.
Which is kind of a weird thing. Because it's a weird little tie-in. Because like, you know, you have Texas Instruments developing this thing with a transistor, which was developed at a Bell Labs research facility, which later, it was in Lower Manhattan on the west side, the Bell Labs research facility where the transistor was developed was later converted into an artist housing project known as West Beth, which was
where Ginsberg lived.
Where the Beastie Boys came from.
Oh, fuck. Here we go again.
Whoa!
Oh, shit.
Listen, all y'all, it's sabotage.
Fucking nailed it.
Yeah.
Here we go again. Just got to bring it all around, don't you?
We deserve a Mrs. Wonderful for that one, right?
Yeah.
Let's see what she has to say about Mrs.
Wonderful?
Rupert, how well did you do?
Don't worry about taking the trash out. I can use the exercise.
Oh, you nailed it. She loves you.
She loves me. That's, there you go.
So the Regency TR-1 was followed quickly by the Raytheon.
Yes.
That Raytheon. 8-TP-1. Although larger by almost three times, it had a 4-inch speaker and featured four more transistors, total of five, giving it significantly more power. Although these early portables were aimed at adults, as we will learn, it was the kids who made them into what they are. Without rock and roll, the portable radio might just still be something that your parents owned. It is an argument that could be had over a dinner table. Without rock and roll, we might not have portable radios.
Well, that was the thing when I was a kid, which will give you some ideas to
how old you are,
how old and sage my comments are.
They're not going to stop us being called frat boys on the fucking iTunes commentary, but go ahead.
I'm kind of honored that anybody calls me a frat boy at this point. You know, it's actually a good thing. Not bad, it's going to be good.
You think I'm 20?
I'm just trying to sit there and think of the fraternity that would take him in.
So sick.
But like back in the day,
Alpha Delta, fuck you.
Like
Alpha Tetra. What's M?
Mu.
Alpha Tetra Mu. Rupert's fraternity.
ATM.
Yep. Yeah. Go ahead.
So, like back in the day, people might like recognize this is like way back in the day. A quality watch would be advertised by how many jewels it had,
mm-hmm.
like a 15 jewel watch.
Yeah, and they're just little itty bitty washers made out of some kind of gem, generally ruby or emerald. And then they just stick them sometimes really unnecessarily in a watch. So once you get beyond like a 21 jewel watch, you were paying for just random shit put in your fucking watch.
Well, what that meant was the rotating back and forth spring, known as the escapement mechanism, mm-hmm. was pivoting upon very hard points, so it couldn't wear out and get sloppy.
Agreed.
And so the jewel were the hard stones that prevented this thing from wearing out. And that's how a watch was specified as being high quality, was a 15 jewel watch or a 20 jewel watch.
Yeah,
or,
but this is a 5 transistor radio, motherfucker. And
so they took that marketing over to portable radios, uh-huh. and my first radio on it was like it was given to me by my babysitter, a woman named Yeah,
I all of a sudden have the hots for this babysitter.
You're gonna have more hots.
Oh no!
You're gonna have more hots for her.
Another French Annie Oakley story.
You're gonna have more hots for her. This is so back in the day that my babysitter when I was a young kid was named Rose Lanza.
Oh fuck! Excuse me. I need a minute.
And she was a very hard, like, she was a classic Italian woman. And for Christmas once, she gave me a transistor radio, and it said right on it, like whatever it was, you know, 10 transistors. And the number of transistors in a radio was indicative of of its quality.
Yep.
The more transistors it had, the better.
We're going to go through a little bit more of that.
For the average
very
man.
Very briefly, but we're going to go through
it was
double this first radio.
It was a direct ripoff of the 10 jewels in your wristwatch. You would say 10 transistors, and that meant it was a better radio.
Yeah, so this motherfucking thing had 5. So you had double the radio.
Yeah.
Right? Another 1955 note was the release of the TR-55 by Tokyo Tushin Kogyo. It featured 5 transistors on top of the initial one to drive it, so a total of 6, and was in between the two in size. This company would become later known as
Matsushita.
Sony.
Sony.
Jungus to get his line in.
Soon to own New York.
There you go.
But the,
and this is where it comes from.
Yeah.
This is where that originated.
The funny thing about it is, like, back in the 70s, National Lampoon did, like, a whole comic book series on this thing, this development that was going on where transistors were getting big and, like, they were sort of mocking this idea that the more transistors, the better thing was a thing. And they did a thing with the advent of the transistor radio, which, you know, in the early 70s was still relatively new.
Oh, and we aren't even 70s yet.
Yeah,
We're 58 in that one. I got one more historical note, and then we actually moved through history at a decent pace.
But they had this whole where like Hiromi Matsushita is walking down the train platform, and he...
If you don't know Matsushita, you've never opened an electronic device.
Yeah.
Just saying.
Yeah, you never have.
Just saying.
You probably can't run a soldering
iron. You
can't
fix a VCR.
Yeah, right. And, you know, National Lampoon had this thing where like, the guy gets this information and it's a comic book form where Matsushita is hanging around on the train platform and somebody says, hey, it's time to board the train now. It's time to board the train, sisters. And it's a bunch of nuns boarding the train. And he's like, train sisters? Train sister? Transistors. That's it. And that's how National Lampoon describes the advent of this whole thing, which was still a relatively new in the 1970s.
Oh, yeah. When I was...
Yeah, I mean, we were in the 50s, and it's come out
This is a little...
It was still
hoodoo guru at this point in time.
It was a very popular gift that was given to me when I went back to Montana at, you know, like 9 years old. So this is 81 when I was 9.
A transistor radio.
Yeah, these little transistor radios, and you got the little headphones. And
Sandlot and listen to a fucking Dodgers game or whatever. Or I guess it's Sandlot. They were Mets.
Little dial radio. But you'd have to sit there and walk around the house, try to find just the right area that you could get just that one signal.
And why are you sitting that place in the yard? Because this is where it actually comes in, motherfucker. Yeah. That's why.
Yeah. One of the greatest gifts you're ever going to get was the ability to now actually go out and listen to things and
on your own.
Yeah.
And you don't have to do it in a room and watch some tin automaton dance around to the same song over and over. You don't have to watch somebody really caress a 78 because they're way more delicate than our modern 33s. You don't have to see any of that. You get to choose whatever the fuck you want to listen to as long as it's on the air, however.
Yeah. And
as long as it's on the air.
As a young child, that now has a radio, picking weeds in the yard just became a whole lot easier to deal with.
Chores were way better.
Right? You got to actually go out. Whoa. I have to spend an hour and a half doing this shitty job. I now have music. That was a game changer for everybody.
So, y'all remember Flumer, right? So, his 1928 tape design got new life in 1958 when RCA released an actual cassette tape.
Yep.
This was a big break from the reel-to-reel. It made tape technology portable. We were not tied to the giant reels any longer by this. This version did not really take off. It took Philips shrinking the thing in 1963 for the standardized version to come out. So 1963, what we know as a cassette tape, was created. That's what it looked
that
like.
But that was
earth-breaking.
But that was a cassette, which
it
is
was. It was. You could buy
not,
a 19, you could buy a 1963 cassette and put it in a modern cassette player, and it would play.
Okay, but
provided everything worked.
This stuff,
yeah, not on your system.
Cassette players.
The first cassettes were not what you were thinking of in terms of a cassette, because this is one of those things where the brand name has become the generic name. Because the first cassettes were actually quite big. They were roughly...
The RCA one was only like 5x5.
It was only like this big. It was twice the size of what you're thinking of
but
as a cassette tape.
But it was significantly smaller than a reel-to-reel.
Yeah, significantly smaller, but it was roughly twice the size of what we think of now as a cassette tape. And now a cassette tape, even though they stopped production of them, I understand that. But the cassette now, that you're thinking of is actually a trademark thing called the compact cassette.
And that was designed in 1963 mm-hmm. by Philips.
Mm-hmm.
Like it was that's when they came up with this design that we all still know. Well, I don't know how young you are. People our age totally know.
What a Philips compact cassette is. That required making the film thinner
and narrower,
and also
more precise heads to record the music,
and slowing down the speed. The speed went from like 3.5 inches per second to 1 7/8 or something.
That's fair.
The speed was slowed down because you got greater density of the media with a finer particleization of the ferrous molecule stuff. And now we're done.
Yeah. The girls just left the party, Rupert.
Yeah. Oh, the girls?
I'm male and I left the party.
The girls leave this party when the show comes on. If you haven't, you know. So
some of the first people to release an album on audio cassette, just a few of them, Nina Simone, Eartha Kitt, and Johnny Mathis.
Chances are, because I wear a silly grin.
Yes. To date when that shit started happening.
Along with the historical thing of Johnny Mathis being the first person in recorded format to be able to sing the national anthem regularly without messing it up.
Thanks. Don't know that I needed that.
You got it. You still got it. That
doesn't change the situation.
That's an extra. Buy one, get one free.
Another big bonus of the Philips design was that the home user would be able to record onto the media easily. Because prior to this, you could not really record at home. And this gave us the ability to record our grandparents' voices or anything we wanted to because it was a double magnetic tape that you could record over and over. It was something that didn't happen before. Because once you burned a reel-to-reel, it was burned. That was it. But with this was different. And you could do it at home.
They did have wire recording before this.
Well, yeah, but it wasn't like home user-like.
They sort of had it. It just was like, it didn't take off because it was like very expensive and very cumbersome and plain old annoying. Second of all, what the hell is there to record at home?
Yeah, what am I going to do?
I don't need
my kids doing the chores that I have.
I don't need
them to do with their transistor radio.
I don't need to record. I don't need to record my drunken parents fighting because I can just hear it live. We'll do it live!
So
I was just trying to get to that.
I saw that.
I know. That's what made it funnier.
So in 1972, the Stereo Belt, which is also a Facebook thing, was released. The first portable cassette player. It actually played the Philips cassettes that we were just talking about. Invented by Andreas Pavel. Played the now standard cassette through headphones. Again, a 1910 thing. It was an absolute fucking breakthrough. But as with so many of these things, he was unable to sell the idea on a large scale. Like, he took it to everybody. Let's make this. And wasn't able to sell it. I know where you're going. Don't spoil it. He tried to sell this shit everywhere. It was... God, I know you.
The first stereo cassette.
Yeah. And it was a belt. So there has been one reimagined in Avengers, I think. One of the Marvel movies, I think, right now, or shows, where they've taken this literally taken the old stereo belt and just very, very slightly modded it. But it is like the cassette player on one side and the volume and equalizer controls on the other side. It's a little complex, but it's a belt, and they got big things on the other side.
My boss just bought one of these things
This is the thing, yeah, I think.
Okay, it comes in two different forms. One kind of looks like a messenger satchel with a strap that comes across your shoulder and down to your hip, and you can plug in your little streaming system to it. You can Bluetooth and whatnot, but it feels like you've got bass actually mm-hmm. hitting you. The other one is this gaming thing that drapes over.
You're talking
you.
About.
Oh, these are different.
You're
things.
Talking about Bones.
Yeah, Bones or Boom Boosters yeah. or whatever. Yeah.
But what they do is they come, if you buy their whole system, they actually come with headphones as well. They come with, it's just this way of looking at. It's just the way that they've incorporated sound into your system, into your body.
I thought you were going where I thought you were going, and I didn't think that you were going where I thought you were going.
No, I was trying not to foreshadow too much.
And so, essentially, yes, that's one of the things. The other thing is, literally, this device has been reimagined as part of a modern sci-fi thing. I think it's a Marvel Universe thing.
Well, I mean, this is where...
I'm divorced from the whole Marvel Universe now, so...
I mean, this is where I come in, because at this point...
we had a rough breakup.
At this point in the early 70s was when, you know, a lot of formats were coming in for home tape recording in stereo.
Yeah, and actually the next paragraph starts with, we're skipping the 8-track here, but yeah.
Yeah, no.
As an example.
We're not doing that. But I was an early adopter of this, and I had one of the very first. I had a Sony flat top. It wasn't a front loader. It was a top loader stereo tape player.
Ooh, wow.
Like in the early,
whether it even works or not, just having it cool. means it's like I have the vertical record player,
right?
And the thing of this thing is, it could come as close as you really needed to duplicate a record. You could borrow somebody's record, play it on your record player.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Shoot it out to your tape recorder, record it in stereo.
Yep. And that was game changing.
That was game changing.
The stereo game changer is also something I skipped. It is part of this story, but I did also
skip it
just for brevity.
I had one of those, and I would ask people to like borrow their records and like I'd borrow them and I'd just dupe it straight to tape.
Well, yeah. It really sucked because you had to do it in real time, which means you have to listen to the whole album. Oh, no.
Yeah, you're still locked in. This is all of 45 minutes, though, is all it is.
And I have to be really quiet while I'm doing it.
No.
And not jump up and down.
No, because you would just, because that's what your sister would do. Your sister would put a microphone in front of the speaker. And receivers came out. It changed the whole receiver thing, the amplifier portion of your stereo. All of a sudden had this thing, which they don't really have on receivers now. It had this thing called tape out.
Yep.
And yeah. And then if you hooked up your...
What do you mean receivers? My receiver has that.
It would do tape out, and you would just put on the record 40 minutes later, 45, you would have as close, you would have, for all intents and purposes, to everybody around you, you had an exact duplicate.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was how it was perceived. If you listen to it now, if you listen to a recording of a vinyl record, it bears no resemblance.
Oh, no, this is what fucked up the Beatles White Album for me. I sing with the skips in my Beatles White Album copy, yeah, because it's on cassette, because it came from a record into a cassette player, mm-hmm, and the Beatles White Album just is all fucked up for me.
Well, that's
like,
because
if you put it on the jukebox, I can't sing along unless somebody kicks it a couple of times.
One of the mixtapes he made for me with, I think it was Fields, no, it was Laibach. Way back in the day when we were like 19.
Way back in the day, yeah, when we were 19 really years tracks, old. Yeah. Yeah.
And you made one of the mixtapes that had Laibach on it, but it was definitely, that you could tell where you went from
one side to the other.
Well, you went from something that was from a CD, something that was from another cassette, something that was from vinyl. You could tell, like, one boom, 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 you could hear everything that was going on with that, even with that one recording in that cassette.
Yeah.
Well, back then, like, if you borrowed somebody's record and it had a skip on it, you didn't really give a shit because it was their record. And you,
right,
you couldn't really adjust.
It's like borrowing a truck with a dent in it.
You couldn't really adjust the tracking force on it, so if somebody lent you a record to copy, you just tape a penny on top of the tone arm, and that got rid of the skip.
All right, so moving forward, again, skipping the 8-track, we're going to move into the boombox. Some argue that the mid-1960s portable stereos were the very first boomboxes, but it was really around 1976 when they became the cassette-playing monstrosities that we carried well into the early to mid, maybe even late 90s.
Yeah.
If in doubt, go ahead and look at breakdancing.
Well, now we're back.
And breakdancing to Electric Boogaloo. When you got those big breakdancers coming in.
And we're back to
in
the Beastie Boys here. Yeah.
Did you just say Boogaloo?
Electric Boogaloo.
Yeah. We're not allowed to say that. Too. We're through, right, guys? We can't say Boogaloo. Because some other white guys fucked it all up for us. We also can't wear a Hawaiian shirt. Nor do I want to, frankly. But anyway,
so we're going from Porch Monkey to now he's going to do it. Now he's going to be all up on it, on everybody's
my
shit.
Left
now
is showing, motherfucker.
It started out that he was so fucking far from left that right wasn't even the same fucking field. And now you're going to do it. Go ahead. Okay, come on. Bring it.
So what I'm going to do is bring you the star of the show from 1979, the Sony Walkman.
Yeah.
Although an obvious take on Mavel's stereo belt, it was only half the size and featured the look of new technology at the time. It also came out at $150, which is quite a bit, but still attainable for the people then. Because $150 is like $300 now. Close enough.
Hit it.
The TPS L2 also featured two headphone jacks, which so you could share with a friend. This was quickly abandoned, and pretty much everyone gave up the two headphone jack thing. But the Walkman was going forward.
Yeah.
I think that we're into the invention of the stereo Sony Walkman.
The Sony Walkman and the boombox, which was portable music, although very differently. Like, yeah, the boombox pissed people off on the subway, the Walkman not so much, right? No.
But, like, and what year are we at here?
1979-ish.
Okay, so let me tell you this. Somewhere around, like, the early, the mid-70s? 75 or 74 or 76.
That's when the boombox started hitting
something
the streets,
like that. That's around the same time that the stereo Walkman came out.
Well, I did the big introduction of the 79 stereo Walkman. 79 stereo Walkman was released in Japan. It was later that year, perhaps the very beginning of 1980, when it was released in the United States, depending on what research you look at. See links, fuck it, whatever. But yeah, you're right in that area.
But like to tell you the kind of impact this had, you know, when this thing came out, like the and I'm not talking about the boombox because the Walkman was like a bigger deal because it was so teeny.
It made car trips easy for parents everywhere.
Pound and a half to 2 pounds of brick attached to your hip.
I think
was so teeny.
I think
and
that
it was.
I think that the stereo Walkman at that time was about the size. I've got a pack of cigarettes in front of me. It was about the size of a pack of cigarettes. You take another pack of cigarettes, you lay it beside it, and then you take two more and lay it on top of that. So it was basically
like five iPhone 10s.
It was basically the size of four packs of cigarettes.
It was the size of a brick.
It was about the size
of
it.
My first one was
the size of a brick.
My first one was this big.
Yeah. That's your first one. I'm talking about the first one. Yeah.
They were the size of a brick. They were this big. Go ahead.
Take two biker wallets.
It was the pack, the size of four packs of cigarettes laid flat, side by side on the table. It was conceivable that you could carry this with you with a belt loop or something like that.
Yeah, they come with like lanyards, you know.
And I was,
they did.
I was
and belt clips and the whole bit. Yeah,
I was out at the beach. And I had these friends whose father was a session musician, and he was a session bass player, which meant this guy had no shortage of work.
But he has skills.
Yeah, mad skills.
He made no money.
No,
he may have made mad money, but a lot of those people don't have any money. Which
no,
is weird.
he made very real money.
Made and had money.
Made and had money as a session musician. And he was always the cool dad because he'd come in and be like, hey, whatever, you know, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, he was like a surfer and that kind of thing. And he was the weird dad because he was a session musician guy. And
well, prodigy.
I came over and it was really weird because this guy, I'd known him as the dad from the 60s where it's like, what is your dad plays bass? I don't even know what that instrument is. It was this weird thing, and then all of a sudden, like, it's like, I don't know, he's like this big deal, and he's making money as a session musician, as a bass player, and he comes, I go over to these kids' house, and they're all sitting there listening to this teeny tiny little thing, the size of four packs. Rupert, you got to hear this thing. I listen to this thing, and when you put on headphones from the first Sony Walkman, and you heard...
Yeah, those like super cheap foam rubber... Oh,
there was nothing like it. It was like the invention of the player piano or something like that.
It was absolutely a fucking game changer.
And I asked them at the time where we were sitting around and we're listening to this shit. And I don't know, we're listening to the White Album or something like that on this thing with these headphones from this cheesy, teeny tiny little thing, half the size of a small laptop. And it was like, oh my God, this sounds incredible, but it's through headphones. And it was like,
that's why it sounds incredible.
It sounds incredible.
It's all yours now. This is why it was such a game changer. It went from sharing it with everybody with the big carry around device,
the thing about it was at that time I was like listening to it, and it was like the mid 70s, and I said, how much does this thing cost?
$150.
It's $150. And it was like, at that time.
That was a set of tires.
At that time, $150 for this small thing that would play things in stereo through headphones was about the same price as anybody's home stereo. This teeny tiny thing cost the total amount of your receiver, your speakers, and your turntable. Easily. That's what it cost.
Yeah. Right. Because that's exactly how much it meant for people to be able to do this.
On their own.
It was that important that people be that involved in their music and their ability to do a thing.
It is said that the average person listens to about 70 hours of music right now. The average person.
When?
Right now. Like today.
70 hours.
A day?
70 hours a week.
A week?
Okay.
A week.
70 hours a day. How do you do that?
That's kind of where
you
I
listen
was going.
To Yes.
Yeah. If you listen to enough. If you listen to Yes, you can listen to
it's
70
like
hours of music
in
a day.
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much.
But either way, yeah, like 70 hours a week. The average person nowadays listens to about 70 hours a week of
but
to their own ears, on their
it
own.
It was a total crazy thing that this small teeny thing costs as much as your entire home stereo.
So Sony releases this Game Changer, and somebody named Pavel, you may remember him with the old belt system, got a little upset, and there was a big ass, long-lasted legal battle between the two, Pavel and Sony. It was finally settled in 2003. When Sony had to pay Pavel a settlement and an ongoing royalties payment. So, Pavel said, you stole the Walkman. And eventually in 2003, he won that court case. God bless America.
Well, they tried to keep him in fucking court forever and a day.
They successfully kept him in court forever and a day. And he was lucky to live long enough to do it. Because he was like 80 when he got his fucking settlement, right?
Well, I mean, the thing of it is like listeners now might not know, but back then in the mid-70s, going up against Sony would be the equivalent of going up against Amazon now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It would be the same thing.
You're going to take on Google?
Yeah. It would be the same thing. Because Sony had two things happen at the same time. They came up with the stereo Walkman, and they came up with the Trinitron TV. Where... Sony
TV is a whole nother one. Don't get into TV, please.
Sony was the undisputed champion of home electronics in this time. There's a reason.
Can I turn you down to 9?
There's a reason why we have the phrase "no baloney Sony," because if you had a Sony, that was top of the line, bar none.
This was the joke that I keep making, and soon to own New York. This is what they do.
Yeah,
yeah.
Well, they did. Did. We're getting there.
Well, because they're buying up Rockefeller Center.
So the Walkman became more than Sony's branded item. It is now more kind of like Coke is to cola.
Or cassette.
Right.
Soda pop.
Exactly. Cassette. Well done. Yeah. It is really like you had a Walkman at this point in time. It was just you had a portable device.
That played cassettes.
Yeah, right. So in 1982, Sony developed the CD. So remember, 80, they're just hitting it with the Walkman and cassettes. But in 82, they developed the CD and released the first CD players. Touted as the new best thing and almost indestructible, which we've
proved
laughed about a lot. Because, yeah, total lie. Yeah,
everybody's got their fucking trick to, you know, spray it with Armor-All and then use a green felt
green Sharpie pen, yeah. My favorite trick.
Because that'll work.
I still voodoo believe in that one. So anyway.
Yeah, of course you do.
Well, you know, whatever. So not to mention, the other cool thing about CDs is that we could make mixtapes again in a new format.
Well, wait.
But not quite yet.
Like, no, you couldn't make CDs.
At the beginning, you got CDs.
You couldn't
We weren't burning CDs
I misspoke.
Yet.
Yeah, I misspoke. We were getting ready to get into the CD phase. So, in 1984, Sony released the first portable CD player. So, 4 years after
now
the
Walkman.
Now you
have the Discman.
With the cassette, we have the Discman, yes. Named after their hugely successful Walkman. Because everything is now a something man. It's the pre-pod era. We're going to get there. The first CD, by the way, to outsell a cassette. Dire Straits, Brothers in Arms. That's how long ago it was.
Well, Dire Straits was a little bit of the first or the new generation of Steely Dan.
Fair.
Where,
I will agree with that.
Dire Straits...
They're innocuous and you can't point them out on the street.
I actually kind of dispute that the first thing was Brothers in Arms, because the first Dire Straits...
It was the first CD
to
outsell the cassette version of the same album.
Right. But the thing with Dire Straits was their first album, which was self-titled... which had Sultans of Swing on it, that kind of thing. Dire Straits, the thing that they did was they had great recording. and their first CD, certainly Brothers in Arms as well. The average person, and I rate, I have my stereo or my recording rating system, and the lowest level is, can a person just walking into your house say, wow, that sounds good? Not sitting in front of the speakers in the proper manner, not correctly listening, but just
hanging
walking
out
in
your kitchen, which is a whole
just
other
walking
room.
In, just okay. walking in. Can they hear that this recording is better? And Dire Straits was the first after Steely Dan where you could really hear that, where they did that with their albums, where their albums were precisely mixed and really well done.
Well, according to ultimateclassicrock.com, the very first commercial compact disc ever released was on October 1st, 1982 in Japan. Billy Joel's 52nd Street.
Yeah, holy shit. Another great album, though.
That was the very first compact disc ever released. The first one ever produced was...
I think that's right, actually, is that one.
The first one ever produced, it says, was a recording from 1979 of Claudio Arrau performing Chopin waltzes, and that was produced on August 17th of 82.
All right, so...
So produced and released are two different things.
We have clearly moved.
So you went from recording some waltzes to Billy Joel within a few months.
Well, it's a really good timestamp because it's waltzes from automaton age, a music box age, into now we're just anything you want to listen to. Billy Joel, for example. Anywhere you want to go.
Well,
and it was well done with the cassette. Is gone. Now we're in the CD area, and
yeah, it's as soon it just shows the variety there because you went and you produce one, the first produced one, not actually released, to is way back then. And but we're talking a period of August through October. What, 4 months? Three months? You know, you had a 3 month span in here where you're covering. How many hundreds of years were the music?
So, with the CD player, dubbed the Discman, Sony really grabbed a hold of the 80s and 90s. And the 80s and 90s truly, as far as portable music goes, belonged to Sony. Nobody else. There were a million competitors. We all had knockoffs and all that. It eventually got to the point where you could buy a fucking Discman or cassette player for any child that was 4 years old and be fine with it. And Sony did that.
Well, and they also did some very important things in there where they started thinking like, oh, we need to actually make them somewhat active. So they came up with these waterproof ones, the yellow ones where they, you know, it's like right. You can go jogging in the rain. Yeah. You can, you know.
Or the rubberized ones where you could drop it or whatever. Drop a CD player, I dare you. But anyway,
but you could you could do this with the cassette players where you this is what you do. You run. These were for active lifestyle, so they continued their marketing plan to incorporate all types of lifestyles. Not just here's what you do when you're on a road trip is shove this thing in the back with the kids and shut them up. You know,
well, on the road trip thing, that's what I did when I went on the road. Is I took a box of fucking cassette tapes and CDs. Mm-hmm. And two players, and that's what I listen to, because 18 hours on a bus, you got to have something.
Yeah, Germany. I had a Walkman, and I had seven cassettes,
and
of which were mixtapes.
We all hit the road, including the musicians that were making music, hit the road with this shit at this point in time. The 80s and 90s totally fucking belonged to Sony. They did it. Everybody else made shit, but Sony did it.
Well, what Sony did that was innovative in this entire thing was if you're playing a record, okay, you can understand that if you're playing, if you're putting on some P-Funk and somebody jumps up and down too much, it's going to skip the record because the sound comes out of the speakers exactly at the time that it's picked up by the needle, okay? And if you're playing a cassette and it jams, the sound's coming out exactly at the same time. What Sony figured out that nobody else did was with the compact disc, you have a data stream.
Buffering, essentially.
And they can buffer it. And so you take this data stream and you hold it in memory and play it out. And so then if something happens, it's like, well, now the memory's going to catch up and you don't have a skip.
Well,
and that's what Sony figured out.
We're also back to the Joule measurement, however, where it's four times over or precast.
Right,
or
if you're oversampling.
All those little numbers they put, it's 16 times ahead, whatever. Fuck, it still meant that if you jostled the thing, it was going to skip.
Right.
Eventually.
Well, no. If you had a short skip, if you had a short incident that jockeyed the laser pickup, it wouldn't really matter because you had all this stuff buffered, and you could play the buffered stuff until such time as the laser pickup caught up with it.
Until you hit the next speed bump while cruising.
And that was that was like a key thing. That was a key thing that happened here was Sony introduced that where they had the no skip thing. Hey, money. I love making money when I'm sitting on my ass. It's the best way to make money.
So anyway, Sony stayed on top of the now commonplace world, as I said. But then there came this collaboration between Karl-Heinz Brandenburg, again, guess where he's from, and Moving Pictures Expert Group. Moving Pictures Expert Group.
Enter the wire today, Tom Sawyer.
The MPEG. Moving Pictures Experts Group. The MPEG standard was developed first in Asia, then in the U.S. Unfortunately, it was not very intuitive to use and was expensive. They built an actual MPEG player. It cost about $400 or more in the U.S. at the time. So we're 98. That's, what, a grand now? Fuck it, whatever, round mouth. Unfortunately, it wasn't really great. It did hang around briefly, but it was buried by more competent competitors, like the Rio RMP300 by Diamond Multimedia. These names are kind of crazy in this time. Diamond Multimedia. So another boon to the MP3 format that was just developed was that we could easily make mixtapes again. Remember when I misspoke earlier about the CDs?
Yeah.
This is when we could start making MP3.
Now we're at the end of the 90s. Yeah. And
we're at the end of the 90s. And everything is supposedly portable, but it's only as portable as a 28-pound package of CDs is.
Well, no, but I think by the end of the 90s, you had CD burners.
Yeah, we did. Yeah, I was making CDs.
This is when it started happening.
Yeah. It was, well, I mean, Napster was a huge thing at that point in time.
Yep.
So Napster was there, and, you know, everybody was pirating music there, and I'll admit that I
did my fair share to ruin the music industry, yes.
Well, you know, it's one thing for, you know, those, for somebody who's sitting there and they want to hear a specific song, they download it, and they put it on a, you know, but for me, I was performing in a live situation. So the way I'm looking at paying ASCAP fees and shit like that, and I'm like, no, fuck you. Fuck you. I'll let the club do that, and they can deal with whatever piracy issues that I bring up.
John the DJ, folks.
Well, I mean, that's how it works. Industry standard. So anyway, I mean, that's a long story. The MP3's creation,
but
made very short.
I think the thing that's really interesting here is at this point in right at the cusp between the 90s and the 2000s is the music industry seems to be really lagging in that. They're concerned about piracy. They're trying to shut it all down.
Not quite yet. We're
blah, blah,
right
blah.
About there.
They're trying to shut down Napster and all this kind of thing.
Yeah.
But the thing that's really weird is the music industry has been through this before with the invention of the compact cassette, where they felt that the compact cassette threatened.
You could just record that off the radio?
Yeah.
I'm not going to make any money off that.
Yeah. And the music industry really objected to the compact cassette's recording ability in 19, you know, whatever you want to set that delineation
and
at.
All of this is in the interest of us being able to carry our fucking soundtrack around.
Yeah, and well, the interest in the music industry is like you're going to copy this, we're going to lose money. But the weird thing is at this time, between the late 90s and early 2000s, the porn industry has figured this out. Nine ways to Sunday. The porn industry is making...
This is what the internet was made for.
The porn industry somehow figures this out. They're making $1 million a second. And the music industry, which has been around just as long as the porn industry...
No, fuck you and your dollars.
The music industry can't figure this out. And this was the funniest thing in the world to me at the time. That, like... You know, I can watch Chicks with Dicks and, like, BigBoobs.com and, you know, Up My Ass. The porn industry is making money hand over fist with the internet and digital transfers of porn stuff. They're making money hand over the fist. But yet the music industry can't figure this out.
Not gonna.
It's just crazy. Fuck. It's so crazy back then.
Well, so this MPEG technology, also known as modernly as MP3, that's what most of us use it for, was quickly harnessed by Seihan Information Systems of Japan. And in 1998, they premiered the MP Man.
The MP Man.
Yeah.
Oh, fuck. Terrible naming. The first in Asia. Then the U.S. Unfortunately, it was not very intuitive to use and was expensive, again, hitting that $400 range. And it didn't work out that well. Another boon to the MP format or MP3 format was the mixtape thing we just talked about. And MP3 went on until Apple introduced the iPod.
Well,
in 2001.
There's a little bit of a skip in here that you've
there's
got.
Definitely a skip.
That's happening with mini discs.
That's what I was going to say.
And mini discs were a thing that I fell in love with.
John, so you're
I don't want to bring this up, but I do remember showing up to your trunk one day when you were selling music and buying a bunch of CDs, and there was a bunch of mini discs. And it's like, I don't have a player. I was like, and your response was like, well, you're a fuck off.
I had two home players that I used to bring into work, but I also had two of the small, well, the mini-disc Walkmans, basically. And you could record with those. You could do all kinds of shit with them.
Was it Mini-Dick Man?
Mini-Dick Man. There you go.
But the mini-disc player that you're talking about was literally the size of a pack of cigarettes.
Smaller.
Or smaller.
It was smaller, yeah.
Yeah.
It was, you know.
It wasn't a whole lot bigger than that fucking Zippo right there.
Yeah. No, it was teeny.
One of the things that allowed you to do, though, was you could record over it, over and over and over
pretty
again.
Pretty much infinitely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
With pretty much no data loss.
Yeah.
And it would allow you to record in MP3 format. Earlier versions of it would only allow you to record in WAV format.
Yeah.
So you went from having essentially one album on it to now I've got
five or ten albums.
Exactly.
On it. Yeah.
And it was a game changer for a lot of things. You know, it was
and
really
so much
easy.
Smaller and more compact and more durable. Because if I remember, they had a little case that was better.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You know, like, but it ended up kind of being Betamax.
Everything about the mini disc.
It really ended up kind of being Betamax.
Everything about the mini disc was actually better. There was nothing wrong with the format. The only thing that was wrong with it was that mini disc relied upon a software system that involved this check in, check out thing. Very sketchy
there was a lot of struggles in the beginning of the MP3 file transfer thing where getting it to your device that you were going to play it on was difficult. It required a lot of proprietary bullshit and it was really rough. And that's one of the reasons Apple won that game with the iTunes and Apple I stuff thing that we're about to get into. That changed that game. It was still proprietary, but as an individual, it seemed like we're a little bit more okay with, fuck it, I'm just going to do this. and make it happen.
What it took to be able to not have to do a check-in, check-out thing, you really didn't have to spend a lot of time and effort, but because technology was progressing in such a way and computers were still, let's be honest here, I mean, we're still dealing in the realm of AOL. I mean, AOL is still a... Like hugely,
we still had Hotmail addresses, man.
It's hugely popular at this time. You know, people aren't computer savvy. They don't have. There's not a lot going on here to be able to, you know, short circuit and figure out how to go ahead and do this. So that whole check in, check out thing didn't exist.
Well, long story short is,
thank you, big hurrah.
Long story short is, I'm gonna do it. is in the U.S., Minidisc does not take off because it's possessed by Sony, which has their NetMD system.
There you go. That is the biggest issue.
Which
you
fucks everything up. And
you can buy the blank Minidiscs from Maxwell.
Yeah.
At this point, but you still had to play them on Sony players.
Yeah.
And every Minidisc player ever fucking made to this day was made by Sony.
Well, and so did every compact disc.
And you go
Sony still gets a cut of every compact disc. They invented it. Wow.
The whole thing just gets like ridiculous where somehow the music industry can't get to where the porn industry is. And I wish that the music industry. Our entire experience of music would be vastly different if it was where the porn industry was, because the porn industry had figured out digital downloads and,
I mean, be realistic. I mean, there's still some 5'3", 270-pound sleazy guy with his first four shirt buttons open and a bunch of gold chains sitting there controlling everything.
Well,
music and porn.
Says yes, your job. You
music and porn. There you go. They're the ones controlling it.
So, again, in 2001, the iPod was introduced. This, again, set a new bar for how we were going to carry our music. CDs started to fall aside and be used more for trading files than to go on the walk with you and be played. So we were using more and more MP3 players. With better and better iPods being produced at breakneck speed, competitors could not compete, really. Like competitors like the Zune, all those kind of things, it just couldn't do it. We were still calling it, again, this is another Coca-Cola thing where it's like you had an iPod, it was just an MP3 player.
Yeah, I had a Zune. It sucked.
Yeah, the interface was rough.
The interface was really rough.
I had a girlfriend with a Zune. That interface was really rough.
It was really... the Zune was a really good idea. It was just executed very poorly.
They were just trying to catch up and keep up, you know?
I bought my daughter so many iPod stuff.
Yeah.
So many iPod stuff.
How old do you sound?
I can't believe... You know, because... I would buy my daughter these, like, iPod things. She just wanted to, like, take her, like, Cinderella music with her and listen to it.
You know why the iPod was so successful? You could teach your grandma to use it. Like, the interface was incomparable. Nobody could come up with a new interface that worked as well as that.
No.
And that's why we moved to the next phase, which is by making the Apple system the go-to for buying new music. With the introduction of iTunes and how it could seamlessly kind of connect to your phone and stuff, and especially releasing it to the PC world, they just further took it over. And so Sony has fallen to the wayside now.
So essentially what's going on is Apple has now...
And Apple controls your
Sony.
Portable music, yeah.
Apple has usurped Sony.
Exactly. Apple controls your portable music now. And
drink from the altar of your god.
And I use the word now.
Suck on the teat of your new...
Because now, yeah. Right now, Apple still does it. It is the go-to place. You could buy one song at a time. You could play any song you wanted, whatever, like, as iTunes developed. That's where it came. The next logical step came from a very unexpected place... Our phones. Well, skipped the iPhone conversation just a moment ago. We had moved away from the corded things of yesteryear, and it wasn't long before our phones could also support our music files. Apple, of course, stayed on top of this game with the iPhone, but not for long.
This is when I realized I had an extreme philosophical divergence from my wife. There was a point in time where one of my wife's friends drives up, and she's got her shit. And you and me know this person, and she's got her shit, and she's got her phone and her iPod and all this stuff, and she's all hip and cool and all this kind of thing. And I looked at my wife and I said to her, you know, I think there's going to come a time where you could have your music on your phone and you can talk to people and you can play your music and you can do all your shit on this all one little thing. At the same time
on this one little device.
And she
says, the guy with a Tidal subscription.
And my wife looks at me and says, you're going to have your music on your phone? And I was like, yeah. And she's like, you're a fucking idiot. And I was like, okay. Next thing I know, Rupert Hughes still has no money, but I'm divorced. So there you go. She could not see that. And I was like, an iPod is the same thing as your phone.
Well, they both start with a lowercase I.
You can't see that these two...
I mean, there is that.
You can't see that these two things and this are the is where same?
Apple, yeah, this is why Apple took over the world.
It was like crazy.
And then Apple finally figured that out. They're like, fuck this. We're going to just put it on the phone. That was kind of the downfall. Downfall as it were. We're clearly in the movement of modern technology. So... when streaming came about and popularized by YouTube in 2005, this became the new norm. It was YouTube that did music that you could stream.
On shitty YouTube.
In 2005, but that feels like 100 years ago, right?
Yeah, pretty much.
And that's what happened. And so now you can have anything for free or a subscription if you want to... Tidal or whatever, Spotify for me. Now you can have anything for free and deliver directly to your hand anywhere you have internet access. So like that's the way we did music last weekend. We didn't put on records. We just pulled up the phone and
streamed.
Made shit happen. Yeah. And that's the modern version of you can have any music in your hand at any time. Right now.
Well, that's kind of what everything has been designed to do since the inception of this. Well, this entire thing is we want it in our hand. We want
that's all
instant
yourself.
Access. We want all of it.
Yeah. And that's where personal music is gone. It's been a weird journey from carrying a music box and a phonograph or whatever with us. And trying to love the repetition to what we have now where it's totally randomized. Like when Rupert showed up at my porch today, I was sitting on the fucking porch doing crossword puzzles and listening just randomized music. And being able to go, nope, don't want to hear that song because the Stones came on. And yeah. Forwarding through that song and this is where we are. We have the ability to hear anything we want at any point in time, and like I can't even envision the next step because currently we can hear anything we want at any given point in time. You just pull up YouTube or the song or the whatever. It's fascinating to me how much it's affected me and changed my world. But God bless the soundtrack of my life.
I love the way that it was able to work. You know, it going from having, you know, cassettes where the idea was, okay, oh my God, all of my friends, we get together and like, oh, you got that, you got that, you got that. Or listening to the radio and recording at home and then being able to put it onto a road trip thing. You know, going back to Montana, which I did every summer when I was growing up, having that Walkman was one of the few things that allowed me to sit in one spot for 7.5 or 8 hours or potentially even longer in a very uncomfortable situation and still maintain some modicum of sanity. And going from there to it saved my ass in Germany. It saved my ass, you know, getting older and older and older. It saved my ass at work. Now we're at, I have an iPod. I have, you know, one of those, it still has the dial on it, but I have the newer version of it. So it's, you know, I don't have any of those iPod touch things. No, this thing is designed for one thing and one thing only, which is to plug into my truck. And I don't have to worry about whether or not I have a radio station.
Get me through a 12-hour drive.
Yeah, there you go. And I love having access to music like that. I love having access to pretty much any information like that. If I want a song, I go get it.
Yesterday.
I can have any song downloaded as we speak, right here, right now, transfer it out, boom, there you go. It's that I love having access to that kind of that freedom. And that's what this is all about. It's freedom with your music, freedom with the things that you love. Do some yard work. You know, everything just gets a whole lot easier when you have a little bit of music in your ears.
So where I think this is going is I think that there is a bit of discontent that the current format of music is if you're some sort of, you know, musical group. And a lot of people think that this only encompasses rock groups, but really it's vastly bigger than that. If you want to listen to, you know, any classical music or anything like that, you can sit around and fuck around with buying, you know, physical format like, you know, CDs or SACDs or Blu-ray music and that kind of thing. But there are various levels of music where how much do you want to listen to it? You know, for me, I listen to it kind of on all levels. It took me a long time to get there, but I actually pay something like, I don't know what the fuck it is. It's something like $25 a month for the Nancy. I have the Nancy Pants title subscription. Right, which means that, like, you know, for $25 a month, it's actually more than my Netflix. I can listen to my Nancy Pants music.
Netflix has been failing me lately.
You know, but I can listen to music in like a format that is vastly higher quality. And this is what I was saying before. It's walk in and Rupert's cooking in the kitchen, you can hear the difference. It's that much better. So there's that, the very good digital subscription services. But I also think that what we're coming up on is things like what this sort of, I don't know how popular this group is. I have no concept of who listens to this group.
But that's us.
Let him go.
I don't have any concept of how hip this group is. They sound sort of to me like a bunch of men that are singing in the same sort of style as the, you know, early 90s group Lush. Kings of Leon.
Oh, shit. Where, they're really popular.
Okay.
Just so you know.
There's really popular groups who have never really had, I mean, their vinyl releases are collectible stuff, but in reality, they're basically digital groups. They're post-vinyl groups. So Krungban would be one of them. Kings of Leon would be another one of them. But the thing that Kings of Leon did that I thought was really cool was Kings of Leon released... They were the first group to release their album as an NFT on the Ethereum blockchain, which basically an NFT means... Very esoteric here. It's something where you can release it on a blockchain like Bitcoin, except instead of it being money, it's a product. So for the purposes of this discussion, it's like if you're a rock group, if you're releasing an album on the Ethereum blockchain, you can just say, this guy bought this album, he gets to play it. There you go. And what that does is that gives the artist immediate control over their thing. They don't have to release their music through Apple and get approved by Apple and get it on the Apple Store. They can just say, hey, here we are, Kings of Leon. We've got our album on the Ethereum blockchain. Do you want to buy it? And I think that that is going to become a bigger thing because I think that rock groups or any group is getting a little bit annoyed at this attitude that we have to pay stuff to this third party who really doesn't do much of anything. What does Apple Music do other than, oh, well, you're on Apple Music so you can sell it? So if you're a rock group and you're like, hey, here's our album, and you just have your website and you just say, it's on the Ethereum blockchain, you can buy it, and you don't have to go through Apple. Apple isn't collecting the skim. And I think that's going to start to appeal to rock groups or any group. I don't know why I keep saying rock groups. I think that's going to start to appeal to any group more and more, that you can buy something on the blockchain and you actually sort of own it rather than paying this monthly subscription to this sort of bullshit service. And if you don't pay a monthly subscription, if you want to down... It gets rid of this intermediary. And I think that's really interesting. And I think that that's where it's going. It's where rock groups or any group is directly marketing to the consumer.
This sounds like something that friends do.
I thought we were friends.
I'm extremely uncomfortable with that.
I know. Do you need a hug?